I speak to you in the name of the one holy and living God. Amen. Please be seated. Well, today we have arguably one of the more famous gospel passages. It's well known both because all four gospels cover it, which is relatively rare, but also because it presents a Jesus who feels maybe a little foreign to us and therefore maybe a little more memorable. This Jesus is not the love and light, calm and understated teacher we think we're used to. His actions are far more pronounced and have been categorized as angry or outraged or enraged. This is because it appears at first blush that Jesus is condemning these standard temple practices he's encountering on this day: money lending, money changing, ritual sacrifice, purity protocols. It can feel a bit like Jesus is even condemning Judaism itself, because all this is happening in the temple, the center of the faith. And this gets dangerous because it can lead to some subconscious anti-Semitism amongst Christians, and so we need to root that out and be careful about how we understand this. And with a longer look at the bigger picture, we come to see that a condemnation of Jewish practice can't be accurate. Jesus was a faithful Jewish man. He participated in Jewish practices regularly. The Last Supper was the Passover meal, for instance. And he never renounces the faith of his upbringing. Even when challenging the system, like healing on the Sabbath, as he was known for, it's always purposeful, because it's centered in mercy first. So it's not a wholesale rejection of Jewish practice or culture. It's rather, perhaps, asking for more from itself, not to make himself better than Judaism, but to draw out even more of the greatness of the faith that he knew and loved. The greatest critiques of faiths and institutions, even countries, most often come from within those who love them. I'll always take feedback about our beloved Episcopal Church, but the critiques that compel me the most are from those who've been living within it and understand it well. So we have to exit the landscape that says that Jesus wasn't fully and faithfully Jewish. He existed in and honored Judaism and sought additional layers of mercy to add to the law how the law was being applied amongst his fellow faithful. So then this passage today. I'm helped by a Jewish scholar of the New Testament, Dr. Amy Jill Levine, who walks through these typical understandings of the passage critically in her book, Entering the Passion of Jesus, and helps us to get a broader picture. So, we have people coming from all over to the temple to make sacrifices to God at the high holy days. These are the scheduled times pilgrims always came. Coming from all over meant coming from other regions too, where currency was different and varied. And so the money changer served an important and honest role of changing money from one currency to the temple currency so folks could buy their sacrificial animals. That there was a fee for this would have been typical too. This is how some people made their living, but there's no indication that they were taking more than their fair share. Levine also reminds us that the animals sacrificed to God were the best ones in people's flocks. They were not the smallest or the lame one, because those were the ones you could sort of live without, but the best, because that's how you honored God, by giving your best. So people often bought the animals at the temple, because to travel a great distance with the animals they would sacrifice could lead to injury or death of that animal, and therefore less of an honoring sacrifice to God. So they came, purchased their sacrifice right there, and made their prayers. So what was Jesus trying to get across by raising this ruckus? The people are not being mistreated. The poor are not being persecuted. The temple is, in his own words, his Father's house. So he's not opposed to its existence, and there were courts for every class of people. The outer court was known as the court of the Gentiles, so everyone could come. And Jesus even helped people, often healed people to make them ritually clean again so that they could participate in the typical temple faith life. So he's not protesting that either. Now, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, we hear Jesus say the temple should be a house of prayer, and it's become a den of robbers or a den of thieves. Here in John, he's overturning tables of money changers and driving out animals that are there for purchase, declaring they should stop making his Father's house a marketplace. So what does he want? In Levine's words, the concern is not the temple, but the attitude of the people coming to it. Levine connects it back to prophets Jeremiah and Zechariah, who each in their own way are in situations where they're commenting on this very thing. Those who go out in their day-to-day lives, committing all sorts of careless, unfaithful acts, but then coming before the Lord at the temple, feeling a little self-satisfied simply because they showed up. A den of robbers, she said, is not where someone steals. It's where they go back to count their loot. So the temple had become a place for some to show off their ill-got gains or wear new finery, all while not bothering to help the poor or clothe the naked like their faith called upon them to do. So those prophets are calling upon people to live godly lives, so much so that their homes become as holy as the temple, that their own cooking pots over their own fires are sufficient for sacred sacrifice because they're treating every day, every moment, as being in the Lord, faithfully following God in every part of life, not just when they show up to the temple to be seen as holy. Jesus' goal is the same, that people are living so faithfully that a pilgrimage to the temple isn't even necessary. A marketplace isn't even needed because people are living the kingdom life in every moment. In this bustling temple structure, Levine contends that Jesus looked around and saw plenty of folks not living their faith for real, that thought they could just make their sacrifice and go back to whatever they were doing just as they wanted to do. So his anger, frustration, his passion for living God's desires for us in every moment culminated in the flipping of tables. It can translate for us too, yeah? Do we live the faith we profess in this place outside those doors? Is our kitchen table at home as sacred as this altar to us? Is the meal we share with our families and our chosen communities as honored as the bread we break here? Jesus wants each of us to give every moment to God, to recognize God's presence in every place, every action, so much so that we don't even need the rituals we create here, because we are living our lives so fully into and through God, every moment, every breath. Not one way in here and another way out there. It's no accident that the lectionary authors gave us the Ten Commandments today to go alongside this, right? These are the ways to live that weave together all of how we should be in our daily lives. And if you can't remember them all the time, that's okay. Jesus gave you a cheat sheet. Love God, love your neighbor as yourself, right? So even if you can't remember all 10, you can remember 2. It's good. And I don't believe that Jesus imagined that this was simple. He lived amongst us. He had a wholly human experience. So he knew. It's harder to translate this hour in here into our daily lives than we'd like to admit, because the values of the world often don't match the values of our hearts. We adjust and we adapt because we want to survive. We want to make it in the world. We often keep quiet on issues of justice or righteousness because it could endanger our livelihoods when corporations or governments are so powerful and we often feel like we're under their thumb. That's why sometimes the extremes occur when people are trying to live the values they believe in, that they hold dear. Their conviction bursts out of them and leads to confronting the cognitive dissonance that's happening inside them when their values are not seen. We saw that in real time this past week with the young airman, Aaron Bushnell, who set fire to himself and ultimately martyred himself in front of the Israeli embassy in his words, "Because I will no longer be complicit in genocide." His protest was his own table flipping. He had a vision of a free Palestine that he was so convicted about that he was willing to sacrifice his very life. It begs the question, what would get you flipping tables? What would you give your life for? What vision of a better world for others might lead you to sacrifice it all? The whole passage seems to be a clear, albeit uncomfortable, commentary on hypocrisy. Don't come to the temple if you're not going to live the faith, if you're not going to live your professed values. And it being this uncomfortable means it's likely something we'd best examine within ourselves. Where do we not feel aligned with our values? And what impact does it have on ourselves and those around us when we don't live them? What impact does it have on our communities and on those who are suffering when we don't live out our faith outside of here? To love God and to love our neighbor is not just lip service. It's not just a catchy line from the Love and Light Jesus. Jesus really, truly wants us to live that way all the time, in every moment. I don't know if there are ways for us to do that wholesale in any moment and not irrevocably lose all that provides us security and stability in the systems of the world. But I believe we can start somewhere. We can all take one step that we feel called to in our own lives or relationships or communities to prioritize mercy, to live our values, to stand alongside Jesus on issues of justice and love. These are not just good ideas for an hour on Sundays. They are the transformative actions that come with following Jesus Christ. They are the actions that can ultimately start us down a road of indeed making each moment of our lives as holy as the ones we spend in this place. May God give us the will and the courage and the power to begin. Amen.